Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash-landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous bread habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
We're recording.
Oh, we're recording. Great.
Okay. Should we just actually start? Is this the beginning?
Yeah.
I'm still chewing my cookie.
Oh, yeah. you can finish eating your cookie.
One thing I've learned from listening to podcasts is there's nothing more annoying than somebody chewing.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's horrible.
While they're on.
There's actually like a phobia.
I know I have it.
Oh, you do?
Misophonia. I literally have it. I'm like going to block the mic.
But it's also like a fetish for some people.
I unfortunately haven't encountered that audience yet.
Well,
but I'm on board if
it is.
Okay,
we can start.
Okay, so I have to say, I've been like waiting to say this, but the fact that we start with a Magic School Bus theme song is like all my dreams truly come true. I don't know if anyone can recognize this, but the little beep beep is beep, literally beep. From Magic School Bus. Moving on down Main Street. And so that's really exciting for me. And I feel like kicks
for me,
us off
it
on
reminds
the right
me
note.
Of a Charlie XCX song. The
yeah, I'm on board with that.
Let's ride. Dun, 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 dun. You know that one?
No, because I don't listen. All I know is the airport.
Welcome, everyone.
Welcome. It's so funny because Danny and I are just making eye contact with each other and like also referring to an abstract audience.
I think it's funny that we caved and started a podcast because that seems to be like everyone who's going through some sort of crisis in their life.
I'm doing amazing.
2020s.
I don't know about you.
You don't get bangs anymore. You just start a podcast.
I did also kind of get curtain bangs.
But you did? Well, yeah. Then you're
killed
winning.
It on all fronts. This is our podcast about. Danny, do you want to?
No, go for it. This will get better, we promise.
Okay, our podcast is about culture shock. So basically, Danny and I moved to another country with very little to no plan at all. Met yes. on TikTok.
Yes.
Danny's video went viral.
Yeah, I went viral and every American in Paris found me on social media, which was great.
What was it about again? You like going
it
to
was about moving to France.
Did you like go to the local? You're like, I go one twice a week to go pick up our
yeah,
baguettes.
Yeah, I definitely like romanticized my move. I was like, I ride a bicycle every day and pick up baguettes, which was true.
You're like severely depressed in this.
Yeah, I'm like crying every night. But no, but it was true because at that time we were in confinement, so there was not that much you could do.
Yeah.
And my in-laws, like they live in this really cute small town, so everything just looked very like...
It was very Beauty and the Beast, yeah, from what I remember of the video.
And their house is beautiful. Yeah. And so one of the things that came up from that TikTok is like, I already thought I was rich. And I'm like, I'm actually unemployed. I'm living with my in-laws.
Oh,
but
yeah,
okay.
Like everyone commented.
And I'm like, I'm actually on unemployment right now, but thanks. but no, yeah, I think one of the things that when we talked about creating this podcast, we wanted to do is talk about culture shock and really the reality that comes with changing your entire life and living to a and moving to a different country. In our case, moving to France or to Paris. A lot of people romanticize that or think it's, you know, you're so lucky, you get to live there, you have no problems, your life is beautiful, you eat croissants every morning.
I mean, it's not. That's what's complicated. It's like two things
yeah.
can be true.
You could eat croissants every morning and your life could be great, but you could also be depressed and have like an anxiety disorder. So I think it's kind of like, I think peeling that layer of, yes, Paris is beautiful and yes, we're very lucky to be here and there could be much, you know, worse things happening to us, but it's also not all perfect and people still have problems and it's, you go through a lot to settle down here. I mean, I've been here for almost 4 years and I feel like I'm just getting settled. And I think that's the one thing when people just pick up a move or change their lives, not a lot of people talk about like the struggles that you go through. And so I think that's what we want to talk to. We want to talk about culture shock, and not just from moving to a different country or being like Americans in Paris, but just culture shock in general of different things.
Yeah. And I think what both of us have in common is that we crave it a little bit. Like we crave what culture shock brings. I feel like I do. I always think of it as I always say, I have to push myself off the cliff in my life. Otherwise I won't do things. But the inevitable of doing that means that I'm like free falling half my life. I saw someone say the other day, it was like a TikTok therapist, but they were like, you have to basically jump off the cliff and know that you're going to be at the bottom to catch yourself. And I'm obsessed with it. And I keep thinking, like, that was moving to France. It just was honestly horrible for the first while. I mean, I got stuck in lockdown.
That was horrible.
By myself. Dated a French guy. Got dumped by him on Christmas. I just, you know, like, it just was bad a lot. But I do think, yeah, me catching myself is like my adoration for cheese and how that really supported me.
Yeah, I think there's something about survival too. And for me, I always claim I love stability, but I've moved so many times in my life. What?
I didn't know that about you. You claim you
love- I mean, I do think I love stability, but then I look at my life and I'm like, why is my life so chaotic then?
Like, what happened, bitch?
Yeah, so I think for me, yeah, same thing. I mean, I moved for other reasons, but I was in a place in New York with my husband and we were like, yeah, we neither of us have jobs right now. It's the middle of the pandemic. We both lost our jobs. And so I think the way I see my like culture shock addiction or whatever for chaos was I find myself in a bad position or a bad situation, I figure out a way to take myself out of it, even if it's very difficult and crazy. And obviously,
That's a real skill set, though, because I feel like we all have friends who are doomed to a cycle of just...
Yeah, well, I understand the other side of it. I think a lot of people get comfortable or, you know, what is that saying? The devil you know or whatever. So they're like, this is the bad thing in my life. I guess I'm used to it and I can deal with it. And I kind of react the opposite where I'm like, this is a bad thing in my life. I need to change it, even if it means moving to a different country and putting myself through hell for the first couple of months. I don't know.
That means you have, you probably have like, have you ever heard that thing about breakups and how in order to, they say like you'll be at like a 4 and if you want to be at an 8, you have to accept that you're going to be at a 2. So like basically you have to have some degree of masochism because you have to accept.
Yeah, probably.
But that's what you must have that. Because I think a lot of people stay in stuff because they're like, honestly, I'd rather be at a 4 than ever have to be at a 2. And you're like, no, I accept that sometimes I'm going to have to like go down to go up.
Yeah, for sure. That's I think my mentality, I think I saw once a random Pinterest quote that just like stuck with me, which was something like, if you keep choosing it, no, wait, fuck, I need to think about it. But it was something like, fear is a prison, or, and then I saw another one that was something like, if you keep doing it, it's a choice. It's not like, and to me, it's just something about picking, like, yes, maybe my life could suck for 6 months if I make this very hard decision and I'm going to cry every night and it's going to suck. But ultimately, there's something good that's going to come out of it. And that's kind of how
You always that way? Or did you have like one life experience where you learned that, like, and you like started to groove the neural pathway or something?
I don't know. I think maybe because I'm like, this is my third time being an immigrant. So for me, it's like,
That's a real answer.
And it's always worked out for me. Yeah. And I've always, again, immense amount of privilege. My husband is French. I don't have to go through a very hard process when it comes to like
integrating
a visa, immigration, like all that stuff. But I think it's immigrant mentality. You're just like, I can fix this. I can make this better. I can move. I can do these things. So maybe it comes from that. I don't know.
But oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, that makes so much sense. I'm laughing because in this outline of what we're going to talk about, we have the question, do you love it? Which is like the logical next step. And do you love it? I don't know if anyone else here, I'm sure there's other people who have immigrated to another country, and everyone asks you immediately, the first question is, so do you love it?
Yeah.
But maybe that's just Paris. I don't know. Maybe that's just like, but I'm laughing because your response in your notes is, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Well,
why don't we start from like the beginning and like answer all these questions that we get all the time because we both been here for a few years already. But Gabby, why did you move to Paris? Like, what made you?
I literally had a life crisis. On a Monday, I called my mom and I was like, I'm going to quit my job on Friday and leave. And then on Friday, I quit my job.
What was the crisis? It was job related?
I was going to turn 30. No, my job was going really well. Okay. I loved my colleagues.
And you lived in New York.
I had a ton of power. I lived in New York. To be fair, I had the worst. Oh, yeah. Actually, you know what I forgot? The guy who died below me in the apartment.
Oh, my God. That story's crazy.
Okay. So I shouldn't ignore the fact that I lived in a horrible apartment. Had a mice infestation. Not my fault, by the way. Everyone's like, did you leave your garbage out? No. There was a hole in my wall. left when they went to go install an air conditioning and then never installed the air conditioning.
Oh, crap.
Moth infestation, ceiling collapsed. We had to take my landlord to court twice.
I remember this, yeah.
Igor. Probably shouldn't mention him because, guys, wait to hear how the story ends.
I can't wait.
One day, actually the most morbid thing in the entire world, I kept coming home to my apartment and I was like, an animal must have died in this apartment building.
Oh no, Gabby, it was one of those, like,
it was
Law and Order.
It was the worst smell ever. Worst smell ever. But that building was hellhole. So I just was like, whatever. Probably an animal did die. 2 weeks pass. I'm on the treadmill in the morning and my neighbor, who has never called me once, calls me. I ignore it. She calls me again. And I'm like, I pick up and she goes, there's a guy below us who had organized for us to go to court. He had hired the lawyer for us to go to court.
Okay.
Because he was his divorce lawyer who we kind of like threw in an extra couple, you know.
Why not?
So we went to court with him. We used to have all of our tenant meetings in his apartment. Was found dead in his apartment. He had been there for 2 weeks.
No.
Our neighbor had a neighbor downstairs had the police came and they had axed down his door. So then I like couldn't go home that night because I'm like, I'm inhaling. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but like smelling is basically eating. So like every time you smell, you inhale particles. And so I was like, I'm eating. This podcast took some turn.
The twists and turns. Like, hey, I'm so dying. What did you move to? Imagine like meeting a stranger at a bar. It's like, what did you move to Paris?
I'm dying.
So my neighbor died.
Because I love that I started off with like
smelling his rotten corpse.
I'm like, everything's amazing and my life was so good. Okay, so unfortunately that's not true and I really reframed that. So anyways, I think that combined with the fact that I was like gonna turn 30,
yeah,
and
no
for
shit.
Me 30 was like, I'd always wanted to try something different, live abroad.
And you are from Paris in some ways.
I was born
technically
in Paris. I lived here 2 months as a baby. My parents used to live here. So I think that it just was like, why not? And I truly like, I'm kind of like you, I guess, in the sense that from what you said, where I just know at a certain point, like, I can't do this anymore. And it was the same when I moved to New York, which I literally was like, I moved to New York a week after I turned 24. 24 was like my golden birthday. I'm like very big about that kind of stuff. And
I also moved to New York when I was 24.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was also when you were 24.
Yeah.
And it literally was like, I was like, I'm turning 24 next week. And I remember I just walked into my job and I was like, I'm moving to New York on August 1st. And like, and I left and I just moved. And I didn't know anyone. I had 2 suitcases, same thing. So I think sometimes you just know. I don't know, like yours, it was a very different story though, because you were with a French guy.
Well, I mean, I think yours was pretty cool too. My story wasn't that cool either. I mean, I also had like a mild crisis, meaning that Paul and I both lost our jobs and we found ourselves kind of being like, we're in the middle of a pandemic in one of the most expensive cities in the world, paying insane rent, and we can't even really enjoy the city because normally... How you justify living in New York is there's all these amazing things you can do. It's the most incredible city in the world. But now because of the pandemic, you don't really experience that anymore. So for us, it was a mix of we are wasting money paying rent because it's stuck in here and we can't do anything.
I can't do anything. Yeah.
And we didn't have health insurance because obviously when you lose your job, you lose your health insurance.
Well, not obvious for everyone.
Well, in America, in the United States, that's the case.
In the utopia that is America.
Yeah. And then I remember I was like, well, it's a pandemic. We have to have some sort of insurance. And I got us like the shittiest like freelancer insurance. It was like $900 a month for me and Paul. And I was like, I was paying so much money. Yeah, it was crazy. And it was like the cheapest I can find. And then I did have a medical emergency where Paul was actually in France and I was home alone and I woke up with like intense pain. I thought it was appendicitis and I was like, my first thought was like, let me ignore it. I'll go away. Like, I just can't afford to go to the hospital.
My first thought is let me ignore it.
And then,
like, our death rates are going to start to go up.
Yeah. And then basically I started throwing up from the pain. I've never had that happen to me before where like, the pain is so intense that your body like throws up. I don't really know what causes that, but that's how intense it was. And I was talking to my best friend who is married to a doctor. So I was like, what should I do? It's like 3 a.m. Paul's in France. And she's like, it sounds like appendicitis. Go to the emergency room. So I got myself in an Uber because I know better than taking an ambulance because it was going to be like $5,000 if I did that. And I ended up in like... I don't know, the shittiest hospital in Bushwick because I lived in Williamsburg and I was the closest one. And I was treated like shit. It was super scary. I didn't know what was going on. Nobody was like,
you're just in the waiting room for forever. Like
the what?
One time I went to the emergency room, I had to sit in the waiting room for like hours.
Well, no, they admitted me quite like, oh, it was pretty okay. fast, but I think it's because I couldn't even stand
they
up
can probably
straight.
Tell I cry wolf all the time.
Well, no, I like, I think the lady was like, well, something's wrong with you, because I couldn't even stand up straight because of the pain. And I remember I told the girl, I was like, I'm gonna throw up, and she was like, okay, like, no one gave a fuck about me. It was just very there's weird,
so many bodily fluids
it was my bed had like blood stains no. from someone. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
are you kidding me?
No. I wish I was. Anyway, it was horrible, like when they took me to get an x-ray, like, in the room, like the guys were like fucking around and like crashed into a little wall, like my little like rolling bed, they crashed it into a wall, and I was like, what is happening? Like, am I dreaming?
I'm dying. This,
I was like, so this felt like an episode from a sitcom. I was like, what is like happening now?
Which I saw like two episodes. But.
It was horrible. The only person that was very kind and nice to me was the poor janitor that when I threw up came to and
so
was
you
like,
did throw up.
Oh, the- yeah. Like 3-4 times. And I told the lady, can you give me a bucket? And she's like, she just
right
like
now,
ignored
right?
me. She was just like, he was so sweet. He came up to me and like patted me in the back, like, it's okay, honey. And I'm there like full of throw up. And I'm like, thank you, sir. Anyway, it was weird. I hated the experience. I was alone. Either way, even if Paul would have been in town, it was COVID time. So they wouldn't let anyone in with you. And long story short, it was kidney stones. I was fine. I was able to go home like a couple hours later.
Do they give you anything, or do they just
yeah, they give you like painkillers.
But they're just like,
they're just like, you have to pass.
It'll pass.
Yeah, it'll pass. This too shall pass. And then that kind of radicalized me, because a few, like a month later, I got a bill for it, and it was like $2,500 for ibuprofen.
To
and
let like, it pass.
Yeah. And I was like, with insurance. And I was like, I'm not paying
sorry,
that.
I shouldn't laugh.
I literally was like, fuck you guys. And then that's when I like, me and Paul had talked about potentially moving to, we always said Europe, because I didn't want to come into France, because I didn't want to learn French. But then that's when I told Paul, I was like, I think this is
like, I'll take anything.
I was just like, I'll learn French. Yeah, I was like, this is how bad it is, I'll learn French. And we, yeah, and then basically we talked to his parents. His parents are empty nesters, so they have plenty of room. And we're just like, hey, we don't have a plan, but we're not really doing anything here. We don't have jobs to tie us down here. Can we move in with you for a couple of months and figure out? And they were very lovely and very nice. And like, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's kind of why. I also had a mini crisis. Not a full-on crisis, but I had like a health, like a wake-up call that was like, maybe we should live in a country that has universal healthcare. Or that you're like...
But it's like the whole like straw that broke the camel's back.
I
feel
course.
Like you have all these thoughts, and all of a sudden one day you're like, yeah, no, like I'm
no,
not
it
living
radicalized
like this
me.
Anymore. Yeah.
I just remember being on the floor of my bathroom, covered in throw up, thinking... I have to go to the hospital, but I shouldn't take an ambulance.
I'm like literally picturing like, and like playing over you like on the.
No, it was just like, to me, it was kind of sad to be like, I need to go to the hospital, but I can't afford to take an ambulance. Like that should never be something.
I did it too when I broke
and I
my hip.
And
I
kept on delaying it. I kept on saying, maybe I'll go away. And that's to me, I think what radicalized me. I was like, I need to live in a country or in a city or in a place that I'm not scared to take an ambulance.
You know, it's like $50 here.
Yeah,
it's $50.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think sometimes,
and
it's
I'm sure you're like, if you have
that.
A mutual, they're like, here's $25 back. Remember my ski accident? That was fully covered, and that was like
that was
a
fully
snow
covered?
Ambulance.
Oh yeah, Danny went skiing with us for the
my
first
time.
Too. First time. All of a sudden, we're in the chairlift, waving at Danny, being lifted, being skied down in a stretcher. Sorry, I was going to laugh at that.
I can
but
laugh
you were
at
like
it
also
now.
Laughing and waving.
No, I was mortified when this person showed up and they're like, we're going to ski you down.
I don't get how they do that.
I know,
I
but he was
barely,
a great skier, I will
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
It was actually, they should offer that as an activity. I had a great time.
I kind of think it too, it was like sled dogs.
It was so cute.
That's
and
really
like,
humanizing for
yeah,
that person.
Great, I really had a great time in the back of that.
Okay, but that was free?
That was free because yeah. somehow your home insurance covers it. Also, it was wow. 300 euros, which I was like, let's just pay Paul. And Paul's like, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah. Also, French people, I mean, this was like a whole podcast idea entirely,
yeah.
but like their idea of expensive is so like living in New York, $300.
Oh, it ruins your
is like
perception.
2.5 glasses of wine.
Yeah.
And so, and when things are like outrageously expensive, it's like that. You're like 2.5, you know, $2,500. And here when they're like, I won't pay that, that's outrageous. It'll be like 180. Like
yeah.
anything above $150 is like, absolutely unbearable for a French person. It is so refreshing. But now when I go back to New York, I paid $190 for a taxi from Newark.
I can't even imagine how much a snow rescue would cost in
oh,
the
yeah.
United States.
oh yeah, you're done. You're never skiing again. No. You couldn't afford to. No. That would bankrupt you for...
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it radicalized me and I ended up here.
We just spent the entire rest of the episode talking about health insurance.
Yeah, I mean, we could. But anyway, but how did you move here in terms... Because that's another question I get a lot. It's like...
How
yeah. Like visa-wise, like...
Did you get yours through Marion Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had to go to like classes or something, didn't you?
That's a whole... Like how to we be can French. Have a whole other episode on the other side of it. When I say I'm privileged and I didn't have to go through it, that's not necessarily true. There's a lot of shit you have to do, even when you're married to a French person. But
especially when you're sorry, you're like, there's a lot of shit you have to go through, even when you're married to a French person. Yeah, I'm like, maybe also especially.
Well, yeah,
yeah.
And so
that's a culture shock in its own.
What did you meet your husband? I want to have a French husband. I'm like, I think you should think about it before you say that.
Yeah. It has its ups and downs, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I say this as dating a French guy for like a year and a half, so I actually am. BSing, but
I just never saw myself with a French guy in my life. It was not like...
Didn't he always date Spanish girls?
No, he didn't. He Poor told Paul. Me he thought he would end up with a Spanish girl. And I said, well, close enough. But no, my visa... Yeah, it's through Paul. Essentially, when you get married, even if you get married in the States, or especially if you get married in the States to a French person, there's this thing called like the family book. And basically you need to go to the embassy, or not, you don't need to go to the embassy, but you just need to let like the government or the embassy know, hey, Paul, the French person, I married an American person, put her in my family book. And once you're in the family book, it's basically registering you as a person married to a French person. So when you apply for a visa, they already know that you're married. Yeah. And okay. I guess if you don't do that, I mean, there's, I'm sure, ways around that, but if you don't do that, then the French government doesn't acknowledge that marriage if it's outside of France.
Could you do it like retroactively? Like
I think so. Yeah. I don't think it's like, oh my God, you forgot to do it. We'll never accept
it. I thought you meant you had to like make a book, because I swear I've heard of people going through like, not green card marriages, but you know what I mean.
I mean,
where they have to make
a green card marriage. We did it both ways.
But I mean, like, it's been 7 years, so 8 years.
Yeah, oh no, I mean, it was like...
I always think of green card marriages as being like... I mean, technically, yeah, but like I always think like... It's kind of like a derogatory statement that I always think of transactional.
I mean...
Like, our friend hooked up with a guy at a bar the other day who was like in a green card marriage, and everyone was like, yeah, that doesn't count, you know?
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, when I married Paul...
That story has additional nuance to it, I'm sure.
At its core, it was because for love, but then it was also because Paul needed a green card and I wasn't going to move to France at that time. But now it's flipped and now I'm using him for papers. So I guess we're even.
Sure. Yeah. Should we get into it?
Yeah. Well,
on culture shock?
Another question we get a lot, which is, do you love it?
Oh, I like to know where you were going with that. we started.
Well,
that.
Do you love it?
So your answer is, let me read this from the prompt. I think it's fine. So what do you think?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I wrote on my thing, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I've never been a big... Okay, this is gonna shock a lot of people because I know a lot of people are like Francophiles, but I've never been like obsessed with France or even Paris. The first time I get into Paris, I was like, I don't get the hype. This is like a shitty place.
You know that like disorder Japanese people have?
Paris syndrome? I think that happened to me. Yeah. I was victim of the whatever it's called, like Paris syndrome or whatever.
Yeah,
it was
literally Paris syndrome. Yeah.
I came here in the winter. I was like, broke college student. I was living in Spain, so I speak Spanish, so I had still culture shock in Spain, but I at least could speak the language. And I came to visit my friend who was studying abroad in Paris. It was December, it was shitty, it was raining, it was cold, I was broke, and everybody was mean. Like, I don't know, we didn't
so
have
you
a
had
single
the experience
good...
where everyone was mean. That's so interesting. Yeah, well, so many people say like, everyone's so nice, I don't get it.
Well, then that changed. So this is winter 2012, I believe. We had a really bad experience. I just didn't get the hype. I mean, I remember walking around some streets in Paris and thinking, it's like, pretty. This is the most beautiful city I've been in my life.
It is, I think, objectively. It's the most, like, uniform.
It feels like a movie set.
Yeah, it seems fake because of the whole Haussmannian situation. Yeah.
And I remember the food and being like, the food is great. Like, everything is good.
You think that? Because I think a lot of people don't. A lot of people I've had visit really don't enjoy the food.
I like the food.
I think Italian is just a lot more...
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. It was winter, so there's a lot of like...
Aligot
like
or whatever.
Crepes and melted cheeses involved, yes. So I really liked it. And I had like 300 kebabs because, like I said, I was...
You had 300 kebabs the first time you came here?
Yeah. That was like the first thing everyone told me, like, you need to get a kebab in Paris. And I was like, okay.
Not one single person told me that.
Huh?
Not one single person told me that.
I don't know,
you're
but
much
I
cooler friends than me.
I had a great time in terms of like food, and just like the way people treated us was not my favorite. Obviously, I was probably obnoxious because I was only speaking English to people. So I get that that was on me. Mm-hmm. But I also felt like it wasn't as international as it is now. It was very That's French.
Fair. I mean, even over the course of the last 5 years since I've been here, the amount of people who've moved from New York to Paris is insane.
And you hear it in the streets. I mean, you hear different languages being spoken. You meet people from all over the world. Like, you just see it's been much more, like, I think, international in the past couple of years. When I came here in 2012, it felt very French. And that's the one thing that kind of struck me as, like,
How dare France?
How are they preserving the culture? No, but to me, it was just weird because it's like Paris is one of the most visited cities in the world. So I just thought it was going to be more international than that. But then I came back.
What month did you come? Do you remember?
In December.
Oh, yes. You said winter. Okay.
Yeah. It was horrible. And then I came back.
Because winter I find summer. To be less international. Well, before COVID. Now just chaos.
Well, but
always.
That's the thing that changed my mind about Paris. I came back to Paris in the summer. And it was like the best trip of my life. Everybody was nice. Everybody was kind. I was like stuck outside of my friend's building because I forgot her apartment building. And the lady just stopped and was like, call her. Here's my cell phone. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? Everybody was so nice. And I don't know if it was like the weather, the sun was out. People were like enjoying the summer. And everybody was much nicer. I had a much better experience. And I kind of realized, okay, maybe I should give Paris a second chance. Or like, I get why people love Paris. So yes, I like Paris. There's a lot of parts that I love and a lot of parts that I don't. But I do think people romanticize Paris. People that have never lived here. Or maybe people that maybe lived here for a short amount of time.
Which is fine. I think about that a lot. And I'm like, I think it's fine. I mean, what do we have? If we can't romanticize things, what do we have left?
No, I don't think it's so that's bad.
But I agree with you. It's a good
but
for sure.
But I think what people forget when they romanticize a city like Paris is like, at the end of the day, it's a big city. It's a major city. It's full of bad things too. There's
tons
crime.
Of urine.
There's scams. There are bad people.
So much urine.
There's urine. There's trash. Like, there's a lot of bad things to the city too, which is not like a Paris specific problem. It's just like a city. It just happens to be. There's a lot of crazy people. There's a lot of mean people. There's a lot of bad people, like any major city. So I think it has to be a balance. You can romanticize it, but you also have to remember, you know, you can't just like dance in the middle of the street at 3 a.m. and like, because I saw a TikTok of a girl, like, I was dancing in Paris and with a guy that I thought liked me, but he pickpocketed me. And I'm like, yeah, girl.
Are you kidding me? That's
yeah. Amazing. It was something like that. And I was just like, yeah, girl, like, you're still in a major city. Like,
it's so interesting because I wonder, I always feel like the moment that I can't. Okay, so like New York for me was this experience of, you know, like, crap. Then I would walk through the city, listen to like, in New York. And then like, be like, I am on top of the world. I'm the coolest person who's ever existed. Full on, true definition of main character syndrome.
Yeah.
And that hour of that walk would carry me through the next few months. Or like,
of course,
running into a random person or like meeting a pseudo celebrity. It's like that, those little moments would carry me. But then there was a moment, and I'll never forget, when I was flying in and I was flying over Manhattan, and I used to get so like, every time I'd go back, I'm from Wisconsin, every time I come back, I'd be like, oh, thank God I live in New York. How amazing. And then one day I took the plane. And I was like, oh no, I don't feel anything anymore. And that was 1 year before I left. And I always wonder, if you live in a city, how much you just, for survival, because living in cities is not easy. You just have to oscillate between the romanticized that then carries you over. And
of
what's
course.
So cool about, yeah, okay, so you agree. Yeah.
No, I think
but
you
like,
have
if that ever stops,
to.
Like if I ever stop walking through Paris and like putting on my little music and being like, oh my God, I live in Paris. Or like, doing, I always call it my like pick me up runs.
Yeah.
And every time I'm depressed, I go get a baguette, a bottle of wine, and cheese.
And
when I come back, I feel.
Have a picnic.
Yeah, or eat it alone in my apartment.
No, I think there's a balance. I think you can romanticize, and you have to, like you said, sometimes
you have
for
to,
survival.
It's like survival.
But I also think you have to realize that you're still in a city and you're not going to like,
well,
like have
don't
a
get
midnight in Paris moment and like meet Dali.
You're not
going to
time
know?
Travel is what we're doing.
Yes. So that's my only, I guess, complaint with like, not complaint, but like, you know, people who haven't really lived what it is to live here are like, oh my God, you have the best life.
Yeah. What is
world.
That? Because I always feel like, what's the problem with it? Does what? Because I have my own answer to this, but what annoys you most about when someone says that to you?
It's so stupid. It's not even, I mean, yeah, I guess it annoys me, but for me, I'm like, yeah, I know I'm very lucky to live here, and I like a lot of parts of living here, and I think it's a great city, but yeah, like I still have problems.
I know, just moving to Paris because
I've seen a lot of like chatter on the internet of people being like, move to Paris and forget your problems. And I'm like, no, you're still gonna have problems here. It might be like a nicer backdrop, but shit's still gonna go down. You'll get scammed
in a beautiful setting. Like, yeah. That's why,
and you will still have depression and anxiety. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, you might be able to eat a baguette in the middle of a panic attack. But my whole thing is...
not for nothing, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great coping mechanism. But no, for me, it's just more like, yes, I'm very lucky. Yes, it's a beautiful city. Yes, I'm very happy to be here. But also, like, I still have problems. It's still shitty. There's still a lot of... I still have bad days. And I think a lot of people romanticize Paris to the point where they're like, move to Paris and forget your problems. Or if you move here, your life would improve tenfold. And yes, it could. But it's not going to be perfect. And that's, like, my only complaint about it. So what was your first, like... encounter with culture shock, the first time you realized you were shocked by something cultural?
Okay, I was thinking about this because this is like our prompt. When I the first time I came to Paris, I think I was 13. No, I probably was 14 or 15. And I had, there are two things you should know about me. One, I was going through my tomboy stage, and that meant my high school's colors were red. Color was red. So I had these bright red sweatpants, landed in Paris wearing bright red sweatpants in 2004.
Okay.
So long enough ago.
Did you see Couture or no?
No. These just were Homestead High School.
Okay.
Shout out. Okay. Wisconsin. Bright red sweatpants. The way my dad was telling the story the other day to someone, he was like, I didn't want to say anything. He's like, I wasn't going to tell you not to wear them, but like everyone's, it was like I was a full on in a clown, had a red nose.
Really?
It was crazy. So that obviously culture shock in terms of like no one cares like, at all what you're wearing in the US. Here? Yeah. And also not colors.
I mean, till this day, you don't really see a
bright
lot of
red sweatpants. I mean, honestly, it's more and more because like, there's like such sneaker culture here. Yeah. But you don't
really see it as often as I saw that when I went back to the US for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, people really do go out in their pajamas here.
In New York?
Yeah.
Pajamas.
Oh, pajamas.
Like, printed like little bunnies and stuff.
Plaid.
Like, yeah, bad.
Boots and plaid.
I mean, everyone follow your heart, but. Also bad. And so that was one. And then the first cafe I went into, I'll never forget. And my brain couldn't understand that other people were speaking a different language. I don't know why. Like, I'd obviously heard, and I was born here, and very weirdly, I have videotapes of myself speaking French before I spoke English, which is the strangest thing in the entire world. Obviously, I don't speak any French right now. But I couldn't grasp it. It was kind of like Sims. Like, I was like, everyone sounded like a Sim. And I was like, oh my God, why are they moving their mouths and sounds are coming out and they mean something to each other? And I'll never forget just how weird that was to my kid brain. I couldn't process it.
That was weird. Do you remember what your...
I feel like there's... I don't know if this was my first one, but the first one I can think of is... Well, I am originally from Venezuela, but I moved to the United States when I was 10 years old. And this was like, I think 2000 or 2001, I can't remember. And I guess there was a big immigration wave to the United States that year, or at least from Latin America. And my first day of school, first of all, I went to Catholic school in Venezuela.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it was an all-girl Catholic school.
Huh? Like nuns? Nuns as teachers?
Nuns. They were called something else, but they were basically like nuns. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I was singing Sound of Music all morning.
Yeah.
How do you solve? That's how I picture our Catholic school.
No, it wasn't that fun. But I went to the same school my entire life. And I had basically the same friends and around the same people. It was an all-girl school also. So wow. I didn't even...
What do you do without crushes? I feel like I had like co-ed experience. My brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't even know what to expect. And I went from like Catholic school, all-girl school to public school in a different country. And I spoke English, thankfully, but yeah, they basically put all these new kids. So I guess, like I said, there was a big mass immigration wave that year, and there was about 80 kids that they didn't have room for. So they put us all, the new kids, basically in this room. And I remember I was just sitting there and some girl comes up to me and she goes, "Hi, I'm Maria. I'm from Ecuador." And I remember being like, I've never met anyone from Ecuador. I don't know what to ask this girl. And like, not in a bad way, but I was just like, kind of like, I don't know. What do I ask her? I mean, I knew where Ecuador was, but I was like, what are they like there? Like, what can we have in common?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that was my first, I would say, culture shock, in the sense that I was like, I felt like a fish out of water. Places. I was like, I don't know how to relate to this person. So I guess that was like my first one. And then I have a million other ones, obviously, from moving to the United States. But yeah, that was, I guess, my first culture shock.
Okay, I have another question for you.
Okay.
What is your, you get two.
Okay.
Top two favorite things.
Favorite things?
About Paris.
I would say I love the lifestyle. Like, they really enjoy life here. And I love having healthcare that isn't gonna bankrupt me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the lifestyle is the main thing that I love. They really live their lives here. They take their time to enjoy meals and go on vacations, and it's not really looked at something negative, which I think in the States, maybe sometimes when you're like, I'm taking 2 weeks off, they're like, must be nice. So I do like, I mean, the lifestyle.
You can't.
You can't.
I'm 34 years old and I have 14 days of vacation.
Yeah.
I work a New York job. But I mean, like, that's unheard of here.
When I used to do that, because I would come to France to visit Paul's family and I would take 2 weeks in a row because...
Oh, it was like comments nonstop.
Oh, my manager would be like, oh, must be nice.
Yeah. And one time I took 11 days and it was like the most insane thing anyone's ever done in their entire life.
And here...
in Australia.
Yeah, I remember I took 2 weeks off here, my first summer here at my corporate job, and everybody was like, why are you only taking 2 weeks? And I was like, wow, this is nice.
Yeah,
so I like the lifestyle. How about you? What's your favorite thing?
It's funny because lifestyle is so broad. Like, it could be so much stuff. I love Apero. We were just talking about this. Like,
I love Apero.
I love Apero.
It's the best invention.
For everyone who doesn't know, Apero is basically just pre-dinner.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it. It is...
It's like a girl starting to drink earlier. Dinner.
Yeah. And I could do Apero instead of the main meal almost every time. Except I have been told that cheese is not technically supposed to be served for Apero.
No, that's after dinner.
So I ignore that.
Which I mistakenly called dessert and they told me it's not dessert either. It's just before,
really?
After dinner, before dessert.
So there's no name for it?
Well, I said, you guys have cheese for dinner, you're weird. I mean, cheese for dessert, you're weird. And they're like, it's not dessert, it's before dessert. It's like a...
No,
its
but
own
sometimes...
Course.
Sorry, I keep kicking you. Sometimes... sometimes it is dessert, though. Like, they have that in... Sometimes, like, maybe at home dinners, but at restaurants, they'll have that in place of...
Yeah, maybe. But I think when you... Yeah, but I think it's considered, like, its
classic
own course.
Case of the French just criticizing for nothing. Yeah.
I'm just like, for no dessert reason. For cheese.
But yeah, I love that. Apero. Second thing I love, very specific, but I love never getting the check. And that is so interesting. Yeah. You love it too.
You have to like chase the waiter down. Like, please let me
pay. But I love it because like in New York, I got kicked out of my table nonstop. Like every time I go back to New York, they're like, ladies, the table's up. They go, ladies, we're so happy to have you here. You gotta go.
Yeah.
Every single time. And so when I first moved here, I was so irritated. I'm like, garçon. Like, actually don't do that, but I'm joking. But I would try to get the check for hours. Sometimes I'd stay an extra hour to get the check. Two things you should know. One, it is a form of respect not to come chasing you down with a check. And that, after I reframe that, I really deeply believe that. They say that usually they'll ask once, or like usually they'll be like, can I get you anything else?
Right.
And if you say no, they will leave you alone forever. Now, the problem is if you want another drink and, you know, like a little bit later, you're going to have to kind of chase them down. But what's so nice is I have gone. I'm going through a breakup, so everyone knows, of course. I'm extremely mentally
Gabby
stable.
If you follow Instagram or TikTok, you would know.
Yeah, if you follow me anywhere, you would know I'm publicly mentally ill. And my favorite part is I can go out for a glass of wine and a plate of fries, and I can nurse that for 3.5
absolutely.
Hours and just sit there. No one is going to say anything to me.
Yeah.
So I've totally reframed that, and it's my most annoying part of going back to the U.S. in Wisconsin. Like,
well, if they're not spending money, they want you to get out of there.
Yeah, it's just nonstop. And then you'll be like, actually, no, we're all good to go. And they're like, oh, well, lucky me. I have the check right here in my little pocket. Like, I always feel like it's so aggressive. So anyway, I love that.
Yeah, I agree. I love that. And we can have a whole episode talking about like restaurant culture because it's very different.
Yeah, maybe we can
and
have
like
a waiter
said,
or a bartender.
Yeah, that could be really interesting. And like you said, it's like about reframing your expectations, because I think a lot of Americans or other people, like other tourists from other places, but especially Americans, come to France and they're like, everyone's so rude, or it took
it's
me
intention.
30 minutes
I think
to get
like
water or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, well.
Well, you're never going to get water. So that is one thing that.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation.
That's not another
the French
episode.
Don't drink water.
But yeah. And so, how about what's your least favorite thing?
Well, the snacking thing annoys me. I don't like to be judged for when I eat. So it annoys me. I actually didn't prepare a least favorite thing. So you might need to go first and I'll think about it while you're talking.
Okay. For me, my least favorite thing. Oh, yes. I miss customer service.
Oh yeah,
so
it's so funny because
we
literally just said like we're saying two opposing things. Like I'm saying my favorite thing.
Well,
customer service
in the sense that I do feel like customer service in the United States is like
to me, customer service is anyone being remotely nice to you.
my parents and being like, this broke, I'm gonna call this number and they will get it fixed, even if it's my fault. And
they don't just say no right away.
How do I solve this problem? Who can help me? And then when you find the customer service person, they're like, well, figure it out.
What do you want me to do about it?
Yeah, what do you want to do? So
it's usually like a shrug. It's usually an aggressive shrug.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, that's your problem. It's not mine. So I do miss customer service and small talk with strangers, I would say. Those are the two things I miss the most. Ugh. I love when I go to New York and like a random person stops me and tells me, I love your shirt, or where are your glasses from? And then we just have like a 30-second conversation that made my day. That has never happened to me here in my life. I've only gotten one compliment from a French person at a Halloween party, and she just told me, she went up to me and she goes,
the one specific thing that's
she goes, I don't know if you're French or American, but I love your costume. I was dressed as Princess Diana, and I was like international icon, bringing everyone together. And that's the only time in 3.5 years I've gotten a compliment for someone. And
as Princess Diana,
not even as myself. It wasn't like a compliment to me. And so I miss that. And sometimes when I go to London, I feel that void, because I think people are much more like, they're friendlier, and they will like, if you're at a coffee shop waiting for coffee, they'll be like, so where are you from? Where are you visiting from? Right. And they'll like talk to you. But here, like, I've been to bars before and you're just sitting at the bar and like trying to make small talk with the bartender, and they're just like, refuse.
No, I mean, I 100% agree. I call it stranger energy. It is, Paris does not have it. I've heard other parts of France, you probably know more about this than me, but I've heard other parts of France have it.
Yeah.
Paris absolutely does not have it. I find it devastating. This is an interesting conversation, but like, there was this really cool article in The Atlantic the other day, and it was about the increasing solitude of Americans. And they were saying that there's first degree, second degree, and third degree types of connections. And first degree are like family. And then third degree are like strangers on the internet. But he said the number one thing that we're missing is the second degree. That like, with the lack of third spaces, it's just basically stranger energy. It's those random encounters. It's like sitting next to someone at a bar, learning their entire life story, and then never talking to them again. That is, oh, and I never knew I loved it so much till I moved here. And no, so, same. The U.S. might be losing it. The U.S. has it 10 trillion times more than France, and I miss it so much. Yeah. And I've noticed it makes me really irritable. I will say, like, that's probably, I agree with you, probably my least favorite part. I think the other thing I really struggle with is just feeling like French people distrust me so much, because I'm from Wisconsin. I smile. It's literally, not evolutionarily, but like, it's so such a part of my Midwest, how I physically
West vibes.
I did that till I was 18. It's a formative. So, and in New York it works too. Like, no one hates you because you smile,
right? And you think people hate you here when you smile?
I've been told I look quote unquote unintelligent.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I mean, I am surprised.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally. So anyway, that's. I agree with you fully.
I miss that a lot. Okay, and then the last question around this is, what has been the biggest change, like within yourself since moving here?
God, Danny, this is like a whole episode.
Okay, I know. I can go first.
It's so hard. Yeah, you go first.
I feel like this is a very deep question. But
such a deep question.
For me, I'm like, I've never been so humbled as I've been since I moved here, and not in a way that like I needed to be humble. Like, it's not like I was like so into full of myself that I needed to be humble. It's just like, moving here, I felt like an idiot almost every day of my life since I moved here, because I don't speak the language, because of the culture shock. Like, honestly, I always consider myself like a very smart, intelligent person. And ever since I've been here, I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot. So that's something like that I've learned. But also, like, on the other side, I care less about certain things. Mm. But it took me a while.
You can only feel like an idiot so much before you're like, well, I guess I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, it's particularly when it comes to speaking French. Every time I speak French, I feel like an idiot. But I feel like now I've come around to the point where I'm like, well, if you don't get it, you don't get it. I don't give a fuck. But it took me a while to get there. So I would say like, moving here has humbled me in ways that I didn't think were possible. New York humbled me as well, but in a very different way. Mm. Whereas Paris has humbled me because I'm like, I don't know anything. I'm an
idiot. How did New York humble you in a different way?
I just think New York is just a hard city, because it's like go, 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 go. Ambition, power, money, success.
Everyone's always judging you. I feel like judging like how successful you are. Yeah.
And here is just like, can I speak to people? You know, it's like a very different thing. So it's been interesting.
Idiot is a good word, because it's also like you can't get words out, and everyone's like, oh, so sorry.
I can't talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm in my 30s and I cannot tell you.
Have a conversation.
I can't have a conversation yeah. with you. So
I think mine's probably pretty similar. I think I always come back to this thing that I didn't even realize, but the difference between personality and culture. And yes. I always thought that they were the same. Like, I just thought so much about me as my personality. And ever since I've moved here, and this didn't happen in New York. So ever since I moved here, I really realized I don't know if the things like, I don't know if me being so overly friendly all the time or like so self-deprecating or like very Midwestern traits, how much of that is my personality and how much of that is just the culture I grew up with. And I've noticed that I'm having less of an urge to just make everyone happy around me because French people just don't do that. And so I've almost been given permission to not do that. And I think I've noticed I can see the difference in me now, the line between personality and culture.
I've never thought of that. That's so interesting.
It's been interesting because I didn't think of it either until I moved here. And I always thought they were the same thing. And I'm very curious to keep finding out what other parts of me are there
right.
underneath this like part of me that I thought was my personality but might have just been the culture I grew up with.
True. I mean, I think the culture you grew up with informs your personality.
It can inform. Yeah. I also just think like now I realize like some of it's a choice.
Of course.
I have a choice.
And then the more you move, the more your personality evolves.
That's why I think you're being exposed to cultures. Yeah, because you see
different. That's why I have an identity crisis every 5 years. I'm just kidding.
It kind of does. Yeah, I mean, it kind of
does. I think totally. Yeah. Something similar happened to me, but instead of culture, personality was profession and personality. Like how much is your career, profession, whatever, how much does that affect your personality? I feel like when I lived in the States, my personality
and your persona,
so
like your identity,
I am.
Yeah.
And then that's why when people lose their jobs or whatever, it's so difficult to recover because not only did you use financial stability, but you lost a part of yourself.
Yep.
And here I find people don't have that problem. Like their jobs are not their personalities normally. Yeah. So
it's really refreshing.
Yeah.
It's funny because it has its downsides in terms of like a lack of ambition in certain areas. But I've accepted that that's a downside I'm willing to accept just because I was having like massive hypochondria, mental breakdown issues in New York. Like I think after seeing like my second cardiologist because I thought I was having a heart attack.
God,
I was like, really? I was like, okay.
My first panic attack was in New York.
I'm like, ambition at what cost?
Yeah, really, exactly. Was near, I'm wearing a heart monitor.
Exactly. I was walking 25. On a treadmill with the cardiologist. She goes, trying to be all sensitive, like not trying to be like anti-feminist, but trying to be like, ma'am, have you considered anxiety?
They're like, I just
it's for sure a heart
attack. Yeah. You're not having a heart attack. You're just stressed. But okay. So we're moving on to our second segment, which is called How Do You Not Know This? And this segment is all about bringing something in culture we're obsessed with and educating or shaming the other person because they don't know anything about it. It's like their cultural blind spot. So
shaming for
yes.
sure.
Gabby, you can start.
Okay. Have you heard of the podcast? I know you have. Exploration
from
Live.
You, yes.
I'm obsessed.
I know.
I'm literally so obsessed with them. I spent hours on their page. So Exploration
Live.
They're
your friends.
They are my friends. Their names are Natalie and Charlie. I love them so much. They inspired me to be who I am today, which is a girl
a podcaster sitting in front of the microphone. Wait, so tell me the premise of this podcast.
Okay, it's such a hard premise to tell.
Okay.
Basically, they take ideas I have and then they share them with each other. But the ideas, there's one idea that I think is a really good example. And the idea is called Vestigial Spaces. And Charlie came up with this idea by looking at like when two cars are parked, sometimes one of those cars leaves and another car parks, but the car will be smaller. So you'll look at two cars parked, like think parallel parked.
Okay.
And you'll be like, why is there the weirdest space between those two cars? Like, why didn't that car pull forward? Why did that car?
Yeah.
Like,
why did that guy park like an
asshole?
Yeah.
Like an asshole. Yeah. But it's just because there was a bigger car there before and they pulled in. So he calls that a vestigial parking space.
Okay.
And he says that that's like an analogy for in our life. Like sometimes we develop a personality trait or like a trait that does us, that like really helps us. Like this is a big therapy concept that you're like, you'll have a trait like, I don't know, being really, self-deprecating. Maybe you grew up around people who just like, they needed you to be smaller.
Like defense mechanism.
Like, yeah, like exactly. It protects you at safety. But then as you get older in life, that no longer serves a purpose. Like in my career, it doesn't help me to be self-deprecating. So it's based, that's the vestigial parking space of personality traits. And sometimes you have things that are hold out from other parts of your life that you developed and you have to decide how to engage with them. I'm obsessed. They have this and then every single segment starts with basically them being like, so this is the thing where like,
okay.
So they're like, this is the thing where like, if you see two cars parked, like I love it. So I highly recommend if no one's
listened.
And they each bring something.
They each usually bring three ideas, or their guests bring ideas.
Okay. And there's no theme. It can be anything.
It can be truly anything.
Okay, great.
It's so random. It's kind of rambling.
It's more like funny or deep or both.
I would say it's two very funny, thoughtful people oscillating between the two things.
Okay.
But they're funny. It's like a funny, deep people. Feel good
podcast.
It's a what?
Feel good podcast.
It's feel good. It's funny. They're comedians. Yeah. They're both stand-up comedians. Okay. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah. Anyway, so I highly recommend it.
Okay.
To anyone.
Okay. I'll check it out. I know you've been telling me to listen for a while.
Love.
Mine is The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, specifically.
Okay, I don't know anything about this other than from Matt and Bowen.
I know. You don't know anything about Bravo. And I've been trying to get you and a lot of my friends to watch, but it's been difficult. But season 5 of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is incredible. It's a masterpiece. They should win every award. This is like the newest franchise of
are these Mormon people?
Well, yeah, it's a mix. So okay. I'm going to go quickly into just some of the loose characters, if you will. But this is the newest franchise of The Real Housewives. So it started, Salt Lake City was the newest city they introduced in 2020 or 2021. I can't remember. This show is fucking crazy. There's just no other way around it. So some of them are Mormons. Some of them are kind of fake Mormons where I'm Mormon, but I own a tequila company. So it's like, what? Then you have two ex-Mormons.
Wait, can I say one thing really quickly? Yeah. You know those TikTok videos where they're like, would you rather drink a cup of coffee or murder someone in the street? And then they're like, I'd rather murder someone.
Yeah. No. It's what? I mean,
sorry, no, I know I'm probably being problematic.
Right, no offense to Mormons out there, but it's obviously
But if you'd rather murder someone than drink a cup of coffee, you might have other problems.
Yeah. Some of the beliefs are kind of question mark.
Yes.
So it's really interesting because religion is a big part of it, obviously, because they're in Salt Lake. But one of them two of them are ex-Mormons. One of them got excommunicated from the church because she had an affair. The other one got divorced. And so she also was, I guess, shunned by her family.
Really? If you get a divorce, you are?
Yeah. I guess it's something you can't do. And then you also have the head of a Pentecostal church.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Pentecostal, that's the thing. Sorry, I don't really know a lot about religion. And this is crazy. So this woman, so the head of the church was her grandmother. She passed away. And then her dying wish was that her granddaughter married her husband. So her granddaughter married her step-grandfather. I know. And they have a child together.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Difference? I don't know the age difference, but they had a child together. And the craziest thing is that this woman ends up being the most relatable person in season 5. Yeah. Then you also have a woman who has a 30-year age gap with her husband. She married an older man who was the CEO of Palm Pilot. I know.
Sorry. What's the girl who has the old husband?
Mary Cosby. Love her now.
Her on Lost Culture, right?
Yeah. Oh my God. She's an icon now. Okay. It's honestly, the characters and the storylines are so insane. And the episodes go from being so unserious and funny to really deep conversations about really deep topics, specifically this season.
It's only 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but she still married her step-grandfather. Anyway. Yeah, this season has been kind of a roller coaster of emotions because, like I said, these ladies fight over really stupid, silly things that you're just like, I love that. I love how stupid this is.
Does it ever get upsetting? Or is it...
It does get dark. There was a woman that got arrested by the FBI in season
Isn't that the one she was scamming elderly
yeah,
people?
She's in jail right now with Elizabeth Holmes, of all people. They're friends in jail. No, I swear to God.
Of course they're friends. Yeah.
So it has gotten dark. Now it's I think the season is perfect because it's really unserious, stupid, petty fights. And then really deep, meaningful topics are being covered. So for example, Mary Cosby, her son is going, the whole storyline that they were talking about is she basically, she's talking about, there's a very powerful scene with her son where he kind of confesses to her that he is struggling with addiction. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I sobbed watching. That's what I'm saying. Like, really? You can go, yeah, you can go from like, there.
It's not what I pictured from Real Housewives.
But yeah, that's the, I think that's
the I haven't watched since Bethany.
No, I think that's the beauty of the show where it's like, they can be fighting. I'm just trying to think, like, they can be, okay, there's another plot line this season about like, one of the girls has like a jewelry line and she was accused. Like,
just so everyone knows, when Danny said jewelry line, she did air quotes.
Well, because, so the whole accusation was that a blogger messaged one of the other ladies to tell her that she was sourcing or buying all her jewelry from Alibaba.
It's true.
Yeah. Well,
I just assume every influencer allegedly does this now, to be honest.
People on Reddit are saying like, yeah. Basically she used the same pictures they were using in Alibaba website. Anyway, so to me, also the lady that accused her of it didn't know how to pronounce it. She's like, Alibaba. And so no, the whole fight was like, you source your jewelry from Alibaba. And so that's the kind of fight they have, one scene, and the next scene is like
the deepest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, like talking about addiction. So to me, it's like the perfect mix of like, let me turn off my brain and see like middle-aged women fight over stupid shit. But also sometimes they will talk about very important conversations that should be given a platform. And Rihanna's a big fan of the show. And she,
you know, I know that because my friend, Liz, went massively TikTok viral because she asked Rihanna on the red carpet.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's my friend who did that, Liz. No way. Yeah, she's a big fan of the Real Housewives in general, but specifically Salt Lake. And she like follows a few of the ladies and like messages them and stuff like that. So anyway, this season has been great because like I said, it goes from, you know, you sobbing over someone's like addiction to,
because it's like the full spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. To like a woman calling the other woman like, you have high body count hair, which is like an incredible insult.
What does that mean?
Like, you have like slutty hair, I guess. Which again,
this is how lame I am. I'm literally being like, does that mean like, because there's so much friction of your hair moving back and forth that like, through like,
also intimacy, all of this happened at an adult woman's bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah. What is a girl one? Bat mitzvah.
Bat, I think.
Bat mitzvah. So an adult woman all of a sudden felt the urge to do this because she wanted to be closer to her Jewish roots.
Okay. Don't hate.
No.
I kind of would love to have a bat mitzvah.
No. Again, all of these things, like, it's like in the same episode, you get this person being like, I want to reconnect with like my roots and my religion and my culture. And then it's like a beautiful thing. And then you're like at the bat mitzvah, another girl being like, you look like you have high body count hair. So it's like,
I need to psychologically analyze how that person came up with that saying. Like, I need, they practice that like before they said it? Like, that's such a weird,
I don't know how she comes up with it, but she's really funny. She's come up with a lot of really good one-liners this season. But yeah, anyway, it's chaotic. It's great. All the ladies are amazing, and I highly recommend it. But now we can move on to our third and last segment. It's called Snack and Spiral.
Snack and spiral, spiral and snack.
Woo! Two things we know how to do well. So basically, we're going to talk something in culture that's pissing us off or making us feel some type of way. And we're also going to share our current food or drink obsessions. So what's yours?
Okay. Like I said, my favorite thing in the entire world is complaining. And the bane of my entire existence is how people walk in Paris. I cannot stand it. Everyone I know knows I cannot stand it. No one picks a side of the street. I have tried everything I can to understand why everyone walks like a literal lunatic in the city.
It's really
everyone
bad.
Spirals and spins and walks and zigzags. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
There's like no direction.
It's no direction. At least in London, people pick a side. I mean, like, the confusing thing about London is like, you'll have
the other side.
Well, yes. And that, like, and that English people will walk on one side and that tourists will walk on the other. Yeah. But I can at least understand that. With French people, I've actually tried to trace it back. Like, was it something from the revolution? Like, was there such an
the French Revolution.
I have actually talked to my friends who are historians and been like, can you explain to me, why is there such an individualism?
Why don't you know how to walk properly?
Yes, I need to know the why. I don't get it. So confused. So anyway, if you guys come to Paris, tell me if you... I will say 75% of people never notice this and don't think anything.
I know.
25% of people will be like, this has driven me crazy since the moment I stepped foot in the city.
I wonder if there's something to do with like in New York, everybody walks a certain way.
In New York, people want to get where they're going.
Everyone's walking fast.
So everyone just wants to get where they're going. Yeah. And for the most part, they will avoid running into people because that doesn't help you get where you're going to get.
Right.
It's like the only exception in New York I found is sometimes there's a weird masculine energy. And I was told a tip. Everyone listen to this tip because it changed my life. If you are walking and a man is not moving for you,
the best tip is to look down at your phone.
Okay.
Because men will, because of their ego, because they don't want to move for you, if they think that you see them, distracted. They think that you will move for you.
Okay.
But if they think you don't see them, they will move for you because their ego is not involved. This works 100% of the time. Okay. In Paris, no. In Paris, you will get pushed off the sidewalk and thrown into the sand.
I've bumped into so many people.
They'll just shoulder and there'll be groups of three. No one will move for you on the sidewalk.
Groups of three. I want to kill everyone.
Couples never move for you on the sidewalk. It is.
Yeah.
Deep breath. I'm so glad we have the snack portion of this ease it down.
So what
I'm
do obsessed. You eat? What's your snack?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm obsessed with these little peanut puffs things here. I never saw them in the US. There's like cacahuete.
Okay.
Have you ever seen them? They're in their store. There's like so many different brands. There's probably like an original brand, but there's generic too.
Okay.
They're these little puffs. They're like
peanut flavored, I assume.
Yeah. Okay. They're kind of like, you know that Brie girl on TikTok who went viral for them, the Trader Joe's puffs.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they're like those. So they're,
Peanut flavored.
They're peanut flavored. Okay. So they're like savory, sweet-ish, the way that peanut butter is. Like peanut butter to me is like kind of dessert plus savory. And they're just really addictive. And I love to have them like after.
Where do you get them?
Any grocery anywhere. Store. Literally Carrefour, like anywhere. They'll have like five different brands. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that like, they don't have in the US. I'm going to be clear. They're not like good.
Okay.
They're like there, if that makes like that. I don't know how to explain
You're just obsessed with them.
I just like them. I like the texture. I like the act of eating them, but I'm not like taking a bite.
I'm fascinated by like a puffy peanut
thing. I'm like debating maybe for the segment we should start to bring stuff in, but then we're gonna chew and we're gonna like full circle come back to how we started this podcast off, which is me trying to like digest.
I mean, we can always like post about it or something.
Yeah,
so people know what it looks like.
Yeah. Okay, you go. I'm so curious.
Okay, so the thing I'm spiraling about is the weather in Paris right now, which is January. So winter in Paris is brutal because it's literally gray and cloudy every fucking day. And I actually looked it up because, you know, I realized last winter I actually got blood work done and my doctor's like, you have a vitamin D deficiency. And I was like, yeah, well, no shit. I haven't seen the sun in like 3 months. And I'm a tropical girl, so I need to see the sun.
Yeah, so fair.
And I was like, I feel like we're getting like 2 hours of sun a month or something like that. True. And I actually looked it up and I'm not really exaggerating because January tends to be very cloudy in Paris. And apparently daylight is very limited. And the average hours of daylight that we get in Paris in a month, in the month
I'm
of
nervous.
January.
I'm nervous. Can I do a drum roll?
Yeah, do it. 8 hours and 50 minutes.
No.
The whole month.
And that's just the sunlight that exists.
Yeah. That's the average. Of course, it could be more. It could be less. But the sun rises really late and the sun sets really early. Yeah. So your pocket or
and
like
also in between
window,
that, the sun is never out anyway.
Right. And the window of sun, the days that are sunny, obviously, they're amazing. And you'll notice everyone is out and about even if it's like super cold.
We had one earlier this week. I think it was the only one we had this month.
Yeah. And even if it's freezing cold, people will go out. So. Yeah. I think the lack of sun is really affecting my
last year I became like
seasonal depression.
Yeah.
Because at least in New York, I mean, winter is horrible, but it's sunny a lot. So I never felt that as bad there. Here it's just like waking up every day it's just like gray. It's just
and rainy.
So it's miserable. Yeah. So that's the thing I'm spiraling about. I'm like, please, I need sun. I actually just bought one of those sat lamps because
You did?
Yeah, I did.
I had one in college. I was not doing
it. I don't know if
college.
It works, but I need to do something. So I'm taking my
works.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I'm taking my vitamin D supplements and I'm going to use my little sat lamp because I think it's just February is also bad and March is, hit or miss.
Last year, we didn't remember how like
we didn't
crazy
have a
it
summer.
Was until the end of April. Yeah. We didn't get sun. It was
so
insane.
That's the one thing I miss the most.
Now tell
me
about what are you eating?
So what I'm eating.
Oh, it's like I'm on the runway. They're like, what are you wearing? Like I'm a red carpet. Yeah. What are you wearing? Like, what are you eating?
So I'm eating a lot of things. But the thing that I wanted to talk about particularly is I recently discovered this like Mexican store by my apartment in the 9th around this month in Pigalle. It's called La Mi Tiendita. And it's great because it has like all the staples that you might need. But I normally just go in there to get tortillas and that's it. But they have a bunch of other things there. So the other day I was having people over, so I'm like, let me get some tortilla chips.
Yeah.
They had like a bag of tortilla chips. And then I asked the girl that worked there, I was like, do you have anything like salsa, like something that I can eat the chips with? And she's like, well, we don't really eat chips that way, but this sauce.
Mexican people don't eat chips with salsa.
That's what she said.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
I don't know. I think that might be like a Tex-Mex thing. Like,
half my friends are Mexican. I don't know.
Maybe it's more of a Tex-Mex thing. Okay. Like people do eat it, but it's maybe not like traditionally Mexican. Maybe it's more like a Tex-Mex thing. But she basically told me there is this one sauce we have that you could use as salsa. So I bought the sauce. I bought the chips. Holy shit.
Do you have it?
No, I just ran out. I'll buy it next time you come.
It's like chili crisp?
They're the best chips I've had in my life.
They're real tortilla chips?
They're real tortilla chips.
Think it's open? I want to go.
Yeah, they're open for another hour. So the salsa was great. The chips were great.
Not salsa, what was it?
I mean, to me, it tasted like salsa, but I think it's supposed to be, I don't know. I can't remember, but it was
like Mexican chili crisp or Mexican.
They do have chili. They had like but it was like a chili paste, but this was not okay, it. This was something else. Anyway, I'm just very happy that I found a Mexican store close to me that not only sells my tortillas, but it also has tortilla chips that are incredible because the ones you find in the supermarket here are just not horrible. Good.
Also, you know what's crazy? When you go to like an actually like a restaurant that you think is going to be quote unquote Mexican and then isn't, they will literally serve you the crappiest things from the grocery store, like full on dried up, gross, like cardboardy chips. I'm like the least you could do is have chips and guac. Yeah. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
Like,
do. This place has the best chips ever. The salsa was great. Even though it was technically name? Salsa. It's called Mi Tiendita. In Pigalle. And yeah, it's like maybe a 5-minute walk from my house, so it's great. So I buy everything there. They have everything. They have cheese, they have beans, they have all like the things that you could need to make any Mexican food at your house. So but yeah, my new discovery there was the chips and the salsa. And I had people over and they tried it and they were like, these are the best chips I've ever had. Like, where did you get them? So it's not just me.
How do you say let's go in Spanish? I'm thinking like,
vamos.
Oh, really? Vamos. I should know that. Vamos. I was going to do the Italian. Andiamo.
Well, I mean, same thing.
It's very different.
But yeah, really good. So that's the thing I'm snacking or the thing that I'm obsessed with.
Well, we did it.
Yeah.
Do you feel weird? I feel a little weird.
Yeah, but like in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I can talk for so long.
I know. Yeah. I feel like the act of talking and lightly being perceived by an anonymous, unknown, ghost-like audience is very interesting psychologically. But once again, caters to the Leo and me. I also feel like everyone should know we're not just going to talk about living in Paris.
No.
That is obviously our own informed experiences, but we're going to talk about other things, including other forms of culture shock, which don't have to do with living in another country, which just have to do with just like, I mean, like me just getting broken up with over text after 2 years. So like
me leaving my corporate job.
Yeah.
Like a month ago. What am I doing my life?
We're both doing incredibly well.
We're both going through some thriving crisis.
So we'll dissect other things and talk about other topics. But thank you, everyone, for if you made it this far.
And
that's
stay
insane.
Stay tuned for the second episode where we're going to cover how to make friends in your 30s and how to navigate friendships in your 30s.
Yeah. And I think if you're like in your 20s, it could apply. Maybe not 22, but like 28.
Right.
Probably can apply.
Yeah. Of course.
I think more self-actualized people. Not to say if you're 22, you're not self-actualized, but you're probably also not. So
yeah, but I think when you're in your 20s, you're more eager and open to meeting people. When you're in your 30s, you're a little
more.
You have
less differences. Yeah. Like, I think in your 30s, you're just like all of a sudden like you're having kids and getting married and then like your life actually.
Yeah. I think when you're in your 30s, you're pickier. You're just like, I don't like that. I'm not going to pretend I like that.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. So it'll be a fun conversation because we're going to talk also about how we made friends after moving, which I think it's another thing that a lot of people have asked us.
And I swear we didn't just meet everyone on TikTok, even though we did also meet a lot of people on TikTok. Yeah.
But yeah, so thank you everyone.
Thanks guys.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Hear you soon. This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.